This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
I just really feel like the Bears are missing Keenan Allen.
I guess they are Chris Collinsworth.
That music set a tone. I was like, are we going into lounge mode now? I mean, are we lounging? Like,
this song by the name of Bars Simpson.
Okay, I'm with it.
Ray discovered it like last year sometime.
I am with it. I need this in the background when I'm at the house just doing some mundane tasks. Just a little set you free.
Maybe Bars, B-A-R-Z, Bars
of course.
Simpson.
Okay, all right. Look, I'm trying to be hip.
Of course you spell it with a Z because that sticks it to the man.
I would like Keenan Allen to like be the guy that Chris Collinsworth knows he can be.
I would like Keenan Allen to be the guy he was when he was younger.
Well, some of that can be true, but not all of it, because he is 32 years old, which I don't think is old, but you believe it is old for a wide receiver.
I'm just saying based on data, for wide receivers, it's the inflection age. Even for great ones, whatever you were, that is often the time where there's a noticeable decrease in production.
Did you have a problem with the trade at the time?
I loved the splash. It sounded great. But I think I did, the day of the trade, say this is a 32-year-old wide receiver who has had injury issues and availability concerns.
But the number correlating with the move didn't bother you in terms of the $23 million.
I don't think so, because you got to fill up to the floor at some point, and it's 1 year.
Right.
So if it doesn't really affect anything you're doing right now, it's all academic.
I love the move because I thought, rookie quarterback, this is going to give him a dependable, proven threat target. I talked about it the other day. Hey, if he is out there on the field and it's a clutch situation, a third down situation, defenses have to key in on him. If they don't, he's probably going to catch the ball for a first down.
So he had a heel issue that has been waxing and waning throughout training camp, which they said, oh, it's nothing, it's because of his cleat. But it turns out the only reason that the cleat matters is because he's got plantar fasciitis, which we don't know how chronic, how ingrained it may be. Let's just listen first to Matt Eberflus talking about the latest on the wide receiver.
Is there a timeline in mind, or is it more about pain tolerance and how he's kind of handling it?
Yeah, it's the latter. It's the latter. It's just, you know, working it day to day and see, you know, what it is day to day. So, again, we're obviously wanting him to come back as fast as possible, but it's got to be right.
Interesting at the end there, is it not?
Well, I think he just said facts. We want him to come back as soon as possible, but he understands this is plantar fasciitis. He knows what the issue is. He's a coach, a football guy. He's been around long enough to understand how many different directions that can go.
You know what this is a test of?
Go ahead.
It's a test of how old school really in his coaching DNA is Matt Eberflus.
How so?
Because you remember John Fox used to, because to me, John Fox was just this sort of, he's the avatar of the crusty old
coach.
We call him owies. A bunch of guys, a bunch of owies. And he was, old coaches used to be so insensitive.
It's all a problem.
And dismissive of injuries. You know, going back, it's like, even, you know, Dave Wannstedt, when he was coaching the Bears, it's like, if you didn't have a machete sticking out of your neck, what's wrong with him? Well, why isn't he out? Come on, Russ. Hey, Tim, why isn't he out there? He looks fine to me. You would, and there's a much greater sensitivity, and I think a much better understanding of not just physical injuries and trusting a player, but also mental concerns as well. And I think football's done nothing but go in a good direction. And look, that's how all coaches used to be. That unless there's an alligator or a python wrapped around your leg.
Don't do that. I told you I've got the fear of the python.
I'm just saying. And the eye of the tiger. But unless they see it, they're not going to think it's real. So I'm wondering, when Eberflus goes back, he's like, man, I hope Keenan's all right. Like, the swelling's down. They say he's okay. But you can't force him. And you can't make it look like you're forcing him. And you can't, like, when he came out and said what he said about Nate Davis.
Right.
That's as close as you get. I've heard him get to putting pressure on a player to say, you better not be hurt anymore.
I think
we're not
going to
tolerate that here at the Bears.
I think the number one issue with this Keenan Allen situation and what makes it different is, one, we're at the beginning of the season. I think this is a different conversation if he had played, let's say, 10, 12 games, and then this happens, right? Because then it's like, okay, can you get through it? My whole issue the whole time has been, hey, if he's not right, get him right, then let him play. I'd rather him get completely healthy and then introduce him into the Bears offense than to get him out there and not knowing whether that plantar fasciitis is going to just pop right back up. And with plantar fasciitis, it may be a situation where that's not an option anyway, because it might flare up anyway, even if you do give him the ample rest and get him back to ground zero.
They don't know. And I guarantee you they're already putting every orthotic in his cleat.
Trying different things.
And there's no one-size-fits-all playbook for an injury like that, and nor is there a one-size-fits-all pain chart.
And he's not a small guy either. Might be different if he was a little lighter on his feet, but we know he's a guy who goes out there, goes where he's supposed to go running the route, and catches the ball, and that's what he does.
I have much more experience talking to basketball players about it than I do football players, just because it's been super common in basketball. Because, I always talk about jumping. Never look at a basketball player's feet. Ever. That's
not what Shaq told me.
Never look at a veteran NBA player's feet. They're all mangled, and like toes are pointing different directions, or they get like dancer's feet.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever seen like the ballet where the little toe curves over?
Okay, I got you, Dan. You're giving me flashbacks.
See,
now.
I don't like feet in general.
Like, who does? Foot Finder exists. You're right.
Who does?
You're right. Foot Finder exists. I just said Foot Finder exists.
It's not kink shame here.
I'm not.
We're not kink shaming.
That's one of the obvious kinks. I think he's shaming. But
he just really wanted me to understand that I am in.
You and I are lockstep, no pun intended, on this one.
No bun intended?
No pun, or bunyun.
Okay.
Yeah. We're absolutely along. Just don't. I don't care how pretty you think your feet are. I don't need to see them. You enjoy. Have fun. You want to sell pictures of them? Get on with it.
You've seen Boomerang, right?
Oh, a long time ago.
But the whole thing was Eddie Murphy's character. Like, he checked, he did a feet check. Like, that was his thing. Yeah. You can't have busted feet.
Yeah. Okay.
I love the face you're making right now. I like making you uncomfortable.
It's just icky. It's.
But so with Keenan Allen and his foot, we're trying to make sure the underside of it is good to go.
Yeah.
And I don't, there's zero confidence that he's going to be good to go at any point in the season. To me, it's just a bonus.
And the reason I bring up why it matters how Eberflus and the coaching staff handle this is just because of the fact that he's so well respected.
Yeah.
He is such a high profile player that they have to treat this very gingerly from a public relations perspective internally. Fans are probably like, hey, is he playing? Is he not playing? He's on my fantasy team. Should I start him or not start him? But I do think that the locker room is watching. And I don't know. Keenan Allen has seemed to be nothing but a supportive professional. And I don't want to make it seem like in any way I'm doubting his level of pain, because I'm not.
My point, Dan, is how different is this conversation we're having if the Bears offense looks competent?
Oh, it's night and day.
Yeah, I think that's putting more pressure where really we should all be like, hey, hope Keenan Allen is feeling better as quickly as possible versus, man, they really need Keenan Allen. Like, they're desperate to have
him. Come on, man. We need you back, man. Come on back. I don't think.
So my point being, Shane Waldron, Caleb Williams, this offensive line, the running backs, the receivers, Cole Kmet, Gerald Everett, whoever you want to put it tight end. For however many snaps, they can go a long way in kind of putting Keenan Allen on the back burner with the right type of performance this weekend.
That perfect.
Yeah. It's like you're still like mindful of Keenan Allen, but then you're happy Keenan Allen's back as a bonus, as long as against these 0-2 teams, and maybe it's an 0-3 team next week and an 0-4 team the week after that, you keep racking up the wins. If you can find your way to 4-1 or 5-2.
Oh, then you're rolling. Like, then, start looking at the playoff possibilities for teams to start 4-1. Start doing that.
I can't do that.
I know
what the data says. You're going to tell me about the data, the data, whatever you want to call it. I know what it says, but I'm going to be the realistic one here and take it one game at a time against the 0-4 teams. Yeah. Yeah, can you look past the Colts right now? The favored Indianapolis Colts playing at home?
I think I already did.
All right.
Didn't I? Kind of.
You predicted a win. You didn't say they were going to win by 10.
No, I'm not. I don't think the Bears are in a position to stomp the life out of somebody on the
and
road.
And if they win 17-16 on Sunday, you'll be pleased.
Hey, get out of there before they change the scoreboard on you.
Exactly.
Come on home and get on to the next week. But I will say, I am reminded, somebody reminded me of this. I think it was in an email. It might have been Frank from Oak Park, actually, who we didn't hear from. Damn it. The hell, Frank. Come on,
is he punishing himself for last week dropping
I hope
swear?
Not. Yeah, no, but he's and he did email, by the way, apologizing.
You had to believe him? You had to believe him?
Yeah.
Then we had to dump him. Yeah.
Yeah, he dropped it. Frank from Oak Park worked a little blue. Yeah. So it was maybe he felt bad. But he'll be back. He reminded that Mike Lombardi has a pet phrase. He says, bad offensive lines travel poorly.
That sounds very accurate.
He said a bad offensive line can be better at home. He said generally bad offensive lines travel poorly. I thought about that. I said, oh, all right, as they're talking about cleaning things up and getting back to fundamentals in a hostile environment where, again, they may need a silent count.
So remember the talk we've heard from Caleb Williams and Matt Eberflus about communication and how important that was for Caleb Williams in a hostile environment against the Texans, and more of the same certainly this weekend in Indianapolis. I'm interested to see how they adjust to that and how much better they play just having been in that environment with a rookie quarterback to this week. That's why I did love where the Texans game was on the schedule. It's like no matter what happens in game one against the Titans, who I wasn't expecting it to be that close, number one, going into the season. It's like, no matter what happens against the Titans, you're going to get your cup up. It's when you go to Texas. And if you do well in Texas, okay, now I got to take you really seriously. If you don't, we're having the same conversations we're actually having this week.
I think maybe my biggest surprise were the number of Bears fans that I heard making their presence known at Energy Field. That was amazing to me.
I just talked to my boy Gabe Ramirez about this. He was there for the game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in the stand. He said it was wild, and he's like, it was such a good, it was a great, obviously, game except for the result, and the atmosphere was tremendous, he said.
Yeah, Gabe and his family pick a road game every year to
every
go
year,
to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, oh, they just happened to pick that one, get it out of the way early?
There was a reason for it. I can't remember what it was. There was a reason they landed on that one.
Yeah, I think he just wanted to explore Houston.
Okay.
He's got a lot of videos online about tacos and food and... And he makes fun of Houston in one of his videos where he like goes to different places. He's like, is this your and name anything in Chicago? And of course, in Houston, it's a very meek version of that. And it's pretty funny.
A texter from the 727 says, why does the media pretend these guys will ever play? It's football. Said, Dan, you said it right. Everyone's hurt all the time, but we pretend these guys are going to play or be 100% healthy. I try not to. We always think about it like fantasy football, or we think about it like it's a video game. But don't people get hurt in video games now?
Man, listen, Tecmo's Super Bowl, which is my favorite football game of all time. Sorry, Madden fans. I get it. I'm from a different era.
In television for the
week. You would be in the game, right? And your player would get tackled, and then the screen just changes to like a hospital, and your player running to the hospital, and now he's out, and you don't know when he's coming back.
Yeah, injuries are a thing.
Yeah, they've been a thing since the early 90s.
I was not a Tecmo guy. I was already in college, and I had a couple friends who would play a lot of Tecmo in college, but that really wasn't our thing.
Walter Payton was nasty in the original Tecmo Bowl. Bo Jackson.
Well, that's the Bo Jackson.
Well, yeah, Bo Jackson was a different level. Bo Jackson was a different level.
Bo Jackson, LT.
Yes.
Right?
These are all guys, and yes.
There was one Madden game I played. This is a long time ago, maybe in like 05, 06 or something like that. And they actually, a player on a team I was playing against, I think, got a career-ending injury. Like, the game actually...
I didn't know you could do career
injuries. It was like a fractured back, and then the length of out time was career-ending.
Like Johnny Knox.
Yeah, I was like 14 years old. I was like, oh, wow, okay. I don't know if they do those anymore. They might not go to that extreme
anymore.
So
in Tecmo, they would show him go to a hospital?
He'd run to the hospital. You know what?
He'd run to the hospital?
I'll pull it up. I think he No, you know what?
Where's the cart?
You're right. Where is?
Wouldn't it be like the ambulance on the field?
It was an ambulance. What happens was when your player comes back, he's running from the hospital. That's what it was. I didn't think about it for a second. That makes more sense.
He's been released.
Yes, he's been released.
And then he comes racing
back. I had a friend who would like reset the game because every time a game would start, That's when you find out if your player comes back. And he would just reset it till his player came back, like, for that game. Yeah, in season mode. Yeah.
But you can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, you can.
Okay.
That's well, he did, so. Yeah.
At least it's a hospital. Like, he didn't go to the morgue.
There weren't blue tents back then.
Send one of his to the hospital. You send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
I have done before where like a really important player got hurt,
and you turn it off immediately.
Well, no. What I do is I just get through the game and see how severe the injury is, and before I save it. And if it's like the season, and if it's like you know like my quarterback, I'd be like, no, I'm not doing that.
I mean, you're talking to the guy that did play by play for Blitz after they lost their NFL. Auspices after they lost the imprimatur, and so to go after the NFL, who the NFL got mad that Blitz got so violent, and the midway games people were like, oh, you want to see violent? Well, guess what? Now that the NFL name isn't on it, watch this. And it's disgusting. It's like they show when somebody gets hurt in a game, it zooms in and they actually show like exploding tendons and ligaments and like blood bursts out of people. Bones are shattering. It's you wouldn't believe it. But the money was green and we had a lot of fun doing those. It's a tedious process, but I remember specifically they're like, oh, yeah, this is going to be the most violent football video game of all time.
Well, from the makers of Mortal Kombat. Yeah, of course.
Mortal Kombat was life changing.
That was the idea. Yeah, I remember the first time I was in an airport when I saw the first Mortal Kombat and there was some kid playing it. And I said,
the end?
Ooh.
The finishing move?
The fatality move? Or like reaches in and pulls the
spine
skeleton out?
Yeah, the spine out. Yeah.
Let's go.
I'd go to the laundromat with my mom as a kid, and everybody, all the kids would be gathered around the Mortal Kombat game in the laundromat. Everybody waiting forever just to get a turn on that
my
game.
Laundromat game.
Go ahead.
Oh, I would not have remembered this. I know we got a break. In Hayward, Wisconsin, when we'd have a day off as camp counselors and we'd all take our big smelly bags of laundry, and before we would like go to Duluth or go out and find a lining kugel somewhere, it was called Yair Kung Fu. Yier Kung Fu. And it was a scrolling side-to-side fighter game where you would build against opponent, and then you'd finally like win the championship.
Okay.
And I thought it was only in this one laundromat in Hayward, Wisconsin, until I found it in the lobby of the Dairy Queen in Northbrook at Dundee and Finkston. Right at that Dairy Queen. Like, whoa, wait a second.
More importantly, did this Dairy Queen serve just frozen treats or did they have hot food?
They had the Brazier burgers. They were a full service at the time. Absolute full service Dairy Queen. And it was the only one around. Only one really that was near us on the North Shore.
I like a little DQ dipped cone. I'm good. I'm not a Blizzard guy, but I like
peanut Buster Parfait.
Okay, that works too.
It
tracks like the Reggie.
It's like a Reggie. Yeah, but yeah. It's similar in that way, right?
And it has the ice cream to
same
go with
kind
it.
Of flavor yeah, profile.
I'm with that.
And the you know, hot fudge and caramel and peanuts and all that. We have now come to the point in this show.
Here we go.
When I can tell you that joining us next on the Bernstein and Holmes show will be Blothar the Berserker, lead vocalist of Gwar, who's performing at Riot Fest here in Chicago on Sunday. He's joining us next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Mike C. Nelson. Now we know his name is Keith from the Progressive Becoming Your Parents commercials.
The White Sox. I can't believe they did more due diligence on hiring a play-by-play guy than a GM.
Middays 10 a.m. till 2.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable to root for that team.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You're one of us.
You're one of us, Mike.
And we are going to be performing right now a little number called Sex Cow in G-flat minor.
Go for it, Pustulous. That's my man. This band will be performing at Riot Fest Sunday on the AAA stage, and their lead singer came to this planet Earth from Scumdoggia after his awakening in 2014. We welcome Blothar the Berserker to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Blothar, I tremble in your presence. Thank you for being
here. All right. Yes. Tremble indeed.
I shall. What Chicago has to look out for what? What if no one understands what GWAR is and from where they came, Chicago is in for what?
Well, you know, GWAR is a long-standing legend in the history of shock rock. And what we do is we perform a concert, just a regular concert for us, wearing our clothes, a group of intergalactic warriors from outer space. And during the course of the concert, we try to just roll out every possible outrageous act that you can imagine when it comes to violence and sexual congress, I suppose you'd say. And but what happens, I mean, we're just minding our own business and we get attacked by various Taylor Swift comes out and accuses one of us of fathering her child. And, mm-hmm. then there's an interlude where we're attacked by our arch enemy, Sawborg Destructo. Maybe I'll lose my mind and blow on my finger and increase in size to just a 12-foot tall version of myself. All kinds of things happen during a GWAR show, and they can expect fluids. They can expect to be doused in the bodily fluids of our victims.
Now, when you say bodily fluids, because that's what I was interested in. I noticed that people who attend the shows, they tend to leave different than when they got there, correct?
Yeah, they're covered in spew. I mean, if they get close enough.
It was actually at Riot Fest, I believe, Blothar, that you sort of spontaneously grew the udders that you feature so prominently.
Yeah, yeah. That was my introduction to the rock and roll world as Blothar. I literally woke up on stage and there I had, I didn't have udders when I went to sleep. I know that. I know that much. But I did when I woke up, so I don't know. Maybe somebody performed some weird animal assignment surgery on me.
The amount of followers that you have accumulated in your time leading this band, what do you think it is about your show, your style, that draws your fans?
I think that GWAR fans are generally outsiders, creative people that see the absurdity in the world and they don't want, GWAR is fun and we're not serious. We're not posing around like that to us is utterly contemptible. Like, just a bunch of tough guy phonies playing heavy metal. I mean, GWAR is comic books, horror movies, all of the things in pop culture that have generally been thought of as low. That's what GWAR valorizes, and that's what we are.
When you say heavy metal, it's easy to presume that a band that has the style of instruments that you have and the look that you have, yes, would be a classic metal band. However, I would say that there's a lot more musically that is going on in there that you can there's absolutely a little bit of maybe low Texas, like pre-Eliminator ZZ Top boogie woogie that is featured. I think there. You laugh at me, Blothar. I
don't laugh at you. I laugh because you're right. I'm not laughing at you at all. I think you're. It's clear that you know how to listen to music. And Gwar has always had. Gwar started as a punk rock band out of the. Speaking of Texas, the American hardcore movement, right? And that's another reason I think people identify with Gwar is that Gwar is a group of artists and musicians. There's nothing else like it in the world. I've looked, believe me. And they collaborate to make this show. And they've done so for damn close to 40 years. And what you see on stage is something that was born out of us looking at rock and roll and saying, this is too serious, man. You know, we like Kiss, we like The Tubes, we like Devo, we like Parliament. We like bands that have fun on stage and putting that on stage. And it's not a group of bonehead metal dudes. I mean, this is Gwar understand music. Absolutely. And we try to work, our styles are about articulating what we're talking about. You know, those are the palettes that we choose when we write these songs.
I'll be honest, I'm showing my age, but my first exposure to Gwar was from Beavis and Butthead. And I'm sure that made a huge difference because of what that show meant to so many people. And I said, what the hell is going on here? Like, is this real? Is it not real? And then I looked, I'm like, oh, they're a bunch of art school guys. And I just thought, like, okay, now it's extra cool when everybody there. I guess for lack of a better term, between fans and the band, there is a sense of belonging.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And the fans help make it mean what it does. You know, they lend their interpretation and reception to it, and it's great. And yes, Mike Judge helped this band tremendously by making us, and of course, Gwar. It just makes sense that Gwar would be Beavis and Butthead's favorite band,
right? But they wouldn't get it. That's why it's funny.
Right, Beavis in particular. Right. I think Butthead gets it. Yeah, Beavis, maybe, I don't think.
Right, I think that's probably fair.
Yeah.
when Blothar, I got to ask you, as you kind of go through these concerts, these shows, and you get so much fandom, I wonder if anything even surprises you anymore. Whether it's what happens with your show or the reactions you get from the fans.
Yeah, can you shock a shock rocker?
Yeah.
Well, I think we do. I mean, I think that even in the realm of shock rock, you notice that Gwar, I say shock rock, and definitely Gwar is important in shock rock, but, it's also very based in novelty and, Weird Al, all of the sort of like, the funnier line of rock and roll that's come, ever since like, The Blob. It's been there all along, like with rock and roll, this emphasis on comedy and, and Gwar's lighthearted, man. I mean, yes, it's dark, but it's, I guess a way to think about it for people who haven't seen it is, the sense of humor that South Park has put on stage and dressed in heavy metal. And that's what we do.
I wanted to ask you too. I remember in the other incarnations of the band when the late great Odorous Urungus was holding illimitable dominion over all. He was a big Washington football fan. The command. What are now the Commanders? He loved that team. Is there still NFL football love? Can we get you in any way to maybe become Bears fans?
Oh, well, I don't know about Bears fans.
There we go.
I mean, certainly, you know, years ago, believe it or not, Gwar managed to struggle onto the stage at right across from Wrigley Field at
the Cubby Bear.
Yeah, believe it or not, we certainly did. More than once we played there. Yeah, that, I mean, we're Cubs fans for sure. I think most of the folks in the band are either Washington fans or, I think we have a couple of Baltimore and, Carolina fans in there too.
Oh, Carolina at this time.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I know. Yeah. Balsack is a huge fan of the Panthers.
That would be Balsack, the Jaws of Death for...
That's correct, yes.
And it's just so people know, it's the FCC knows, that would be Balzac, as in the French satirist Honoré de Balzac.
Correct.
Okay. Just have to make sure that I make that clarification.
The knowledge is deep. You might be, Blothar, you might be on with your biggest fan. I'm not going to lie. Dan might be your biggest fan.
I love the bit. It's right up my alley. As somebody who grew up late at night listening to the Dr. Demento show in his bedroom at 11 o'clock on the loop and making cassette tape recordings of the Dr. Demento show, these guys, I think you're carrying a torch for the powers of good, even though you may be dressed otherwise.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, Dr. Demento was a huge... huge influence on us. No question. All of that, and all of the, you know, late night television hosts, any goofball, all of them, you know, that's what Gwar is like, very much, you know, the dull glow of black and white television at 4 o'clock in the morning. But you asked me if anything shocked us, and what I was going to tell you, I was getting started to say that, you know, I love the way that fans experience Gwar, and it looks like somebody checked a box that says, it's okay to be you. I don't know why this band has that effect. I don't know, but it's like somebody said, look, anything that you want to do is cool, do it. Try to make it happen, right? And that's the effect that we have. And I watch it happen on people's faces that haven't seen the band before. They can't believe that a band is doing what we're doing. You know, and that was, and it's as true today as it was 40 years ago. So, you know, because Gwar breaks the rules, we don't stay in that frame. You know, just like Iggy Pop wandering out into the audience with peanut butter all over him, you know, Gwar breaks that wall. And people respond to it.
That wall will be broken Sunday. Gwar performing at Riot Fest Sunday on the AAA stage. Our guest has been Blothar the Berserker. I wish I could tell you what a unique pleasure this has been. Good luck and farewell.
All right. Thank you very much.
That is Blothar.
I think he knows. I think he knows how much of a pleasure it's been for you.
You think
so? Yeah, I don't think he has to read between any lines.
Can we just briefly talk about how perfect it is that the guy named Balzac is a Panthers fan?
Yeah,
I let it go
because I was like, it's too on the nose.
So I know there are people wondering, like, what the hell, man? Who is that guy really?
Tell the people, they deserve to know.
We'll come back, and I'll give you sort of the inside bit as to why the guy who looks like that also sounds like that. Next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The score, 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 score.
And 670thescore.com and Odyssey Station.
I love the way that fans experience Gwar, and it looks like somebody checked a box that says, it's okay to be you. I don't know why this band has that effect. I don't know, but it's like somebody said, look, anything that you want to do is cool, do it. Try to make it happen, right? And that's the effect that we have, and I watch it happen on people's faces that haven't seen the band before. They can't believe that a band is doing what we're doing.
And you wonder, why is this guy wearing that stupid suit and the giant antlers poking out of his back and carrying the shield, and he has udders.
Yeah, don't forget the udders.
Spraying all sorts of things on the audience. Why does he sound... why is he so well-spoken?
Articulate.
Well, the human being behind the character, and I let full disclosure, when Ray booked him, he was booked as Blothar. And we were saying, like, is he going to be in studio? It takes hours for them to put the makeup on. So that's why he didn't do Twitch.
Yeah, that's the only reason, because it would have to be later in the day, because it takes a long time for them to get in costume.
And as I've read a lot about them, and when they get in costume, there is sort of a method acting thing that they become the characters.
It has to be.
As you can understand, when you're under that many layers and carrying around a giant wooden shield. But the... I didn't know if I was interviewing the character or interviewing Dr. Michael Bishop. Because Mike Bishop, PhD in music from the University of Virginia, is the man behind the costume. He teaches undergraduate courses in American music history and writing at the University of Virginia. And he also is the learning strategist and lead technical writer at an education technology company. So, yeah, this is sort of a fun, like, weekend gig for him. That just
we all have hobbies, Dan. We all have hobbies.
Yeah, but
that's what it comes down to.
Very few people have this one.
His is just a little more eccentric than others.
Uh-huh. And that's how it started. It started at in Richmond, Virginia, with a bunch of college kids who went to a warehouse and started making all sorts of noises, and they had started dressed in weird costumes.
Origin 1984, right? It's like,
yeah,
they're about to be 40 years old.
He said they've been doing this for 40 years.
That's wild. And the fact that they've had members come and go.
Oh, yeah. It's a collective.
Right.
And their lineup has changed, but some of the characters have been the same. Mike Bishop, for a long time, was Beefcake the Mighty. And then after Dave Brocky died, Dave Brocky was Odorous Urungus, who was, and they have a song about him called Phantom Limb, where they just talk about what it's like to for the band to continue on without Dave Brocky. But, yeah, so Bishop took over. They created, Blothar was born in their mythos after the death of Odorous Urungus, who occasionally, believe it or not, used to appear on Fox News.
Doing what?
As a commentator. Like, back in the years and years and years ago, there was some late-night Fox News show that would randomly go to him as in, like, a four box, and you'd see three normal people wearing suits and the front man of Gore. So they've been doing this kind of thing for a while.
This just goes back to my overall point these days. Nothing surprises me. No new information that's shed to me, like, oh, okay, I guess that could be a thing.
Hey, Dan, who do you become on the weekends? I wish I had a good answer. I'm just maybe a version of myself that's not wearing pants.
Why aren't you wearing pants?
I'm in the house watching football.
You wearing shorts?
Maybe.
Like running around in your underwear?
The wife and daughter are home. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to be presentable.
Wait,
if they're home, of course I'll have pants on.
Okay, good. Okay.
I mean, I'm not.
That's what I was checking.
But if she's working and Zoe's out or doing whatever, yeah. I mean, I'm wandering around myself.
In your underwear.
Like Hamlet. Yes.
Okay.
Callers 6 and 7 to the Scores contest line, 312-540-0670. We'll win a pair of tickets to Mully and Hawes' September 25th broadcast from 5:30 to 10 a.m. at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Mully and Hawes will be joined by Bulls Vice President of Basketball Operations Arturis Karnišovas and Head Coach Billy Donovan in studio during the 8 a.m. hour that morning. It's all brought to you by Blue Cross of Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. Next up, it is Spiegel and
company,
and the company today is the handsome Paul Pabst. Ooh, very, very special. Yes, he was a longtime Dan Patrick guy, also making a name for himself. A great Twitter follow, by the way, because Paul Pabst is a guy that is really good at alerting you as to when games get good and you should turn them on.
I like that. That's a needed feature.
It is. He's a great resource. So we'll talk to them next.